All right, everybody. Welcome to this Wednesday afternoon session, where Christian Mikkelsen will be joining us and talk about hyperparameter optimization. So now you got an algorithm working and gives respectable results, but you want to do a little better. And well, then you'll have to redesign things, and it's not easy to know what works. How do you systematically go through that? And I'll leave the word to Christian, and you can share your screen with everybody else.
Hello, everyone. My name is Christian, and I'm a PhD student at TOLS. And I'm here to talk to you about hyperparameter optimization. For now, I'll just go on to sharing my screen, and then I'll, as you already have posted the links for the slides, which I'll just go through. And if you have any questions, just please let me know, and I'll try to follow the comments along the way. But this is also the first time I'm trying a Zoom lecture, so please just let me know if you have any questions. Share screen. Here we go, I think. Yes, okay. Okay, so hyperparameter optimization. This lecture is based on an interactive Jupyter Notebook, which is posted on my GitHub. And it's, the focus of today is hyperparameter optimization. So today I'll talk about different approaches to performing hyperparameter optimization. First, I'll go through a very naive manual approach, and then I'll extend it with some more modern methods, such as squid search, and random search, and Bayesian optimization. And also talk about some other examples later on. And finally, I'll conclude with some new methods that are, not really that well used yet, but which definitely have advantages compared to previous methods. Okay, so I'll just keep going. And the lecture today is based on physics datasets based on pulsars, but we're not going to go into the data itself. It's more about the methods compared to the data. And the focus also to understand hyperparameter optimization. And I won't go that much into the actual code, but I'll provide a lot of snippets that you can use in your own work later on, or even in your examples later today. All right, so what are we talking about? So I'll first introduce some naming of the different parameters and what is the basic nomenclature of the field. And say that you have a machine learning model A. This could be a decision tree, it could be a linear regression, it could be anything, a neural network, but you have some model A. This model, it has n different hyperparameters. So hyperparameters, I'm sure you already know, but that's parameters that you cannot just learn by looking at the data. That's parameters you have to choose yourself. So for example, the parameters of a linear fit, that would be a parameter, whereas the number of parameters to include in a different model, that is the hyperparameters. Okay. So what is the domain of each different hyperparameter? That's defined by this lambda. And then you have the total number of configurations for the hyperparameters, which is this bold lambda, which is simply the Cartesian product of all the individual domains. Okay, so you have this hyperdimensional space and you want to find the best hyperparameter lambda, which is gonna be a vector in this hyperdimensional space. And then the best machine learning model is then a lambda. Okay. You have a different domain for each hyperparameter, and that simply means what values are this hyperparameter allowed to take. That could, for example, be a real number, it could be an integer number, it could be a binary, or a categorical. So, for example, a real number, that could be the any number, for example, the weight of some parameter that is simply a float. Usually we define it to be strictly positive. But you could also have something like an integer parameter. And in a decision tree. That could be the number of trees to include, for example. Okay, you can also have some hyperparameters that turn either something on or off, which is what we call binary hyperparameters. And then finally, you could have different sets in a group, which is what we call a categorical. So that could, for example, be, should it be a loss function A, a loss function B, or something even different. Okay. And yes, okay. Let's see. Okay, I see a question here. Is it even sensible to have complex hyperparameters? Is it some sort of MLA that use those? So I haven't seen any use of complex hyperparameters in the, at least not in the mathematical sense of a complex number. But even with a mix of these four different hyperparameters, you can still make very advanced models, and you don't usually need anything else than that. Okay, I hope that was great answer enough for Sovis. Okay, I'll try to continue. Okay, so what we really want to find here is this best vector of hyperparameters, lambda star, and that is defined given by this equation right here. So we want to find the hyperparameter lambda being a part of lambda star here of the hyperdimensional space that gives the lowest expectation value of the loss on your data set. And you can write it up like this very mathematically, but I'm not going to go that much into the mathematics of this. It's mostly about how to actually use this as a method. So it's basically the set of hyperparameters that minimize the loss given some metric, depending on your loss function and the test data set and so on. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So now I'll go a bit through the different code. At first, we are loading in a bunch of Python modules here. Hopefully, you know most of them by now. You have NumPy, you have scikit-learn, a bunch of that. Then we use GraphVis to do some visualization, which I'll show in just a minute. We have Pandas, which I personally really like to use. And you have some awesome SciPy. Actually, I can say I have NumPy twice. Okay. And then we have some plotting and so on. Okay. So very basic import statement here. And okay, I'm just going to read in the data so you have an idea about what kind of data do we have in this case. So here, this is really a nice feature of Pandas, read CSV. And we see here that we have the different columns, the different variables. We have some mean signal-to-noise ratio, some standard deviation, and then you have also the higher orders, the skewness and the kurtosis, which you might have heard about it in some earlier statistics classes. What these variables represent is not important. For us, it's just data, but there might be some astronomers among you that actually know what these variables mean. But what's important is that, well, we have some numerical features, and then we also have the class. And it seems like right now that we only have one class, which is called, would be a pretty boring data set. But let's try to look at it a bit more. Okay, so first we define the X columns here to be all the numerical columns we see down here. So that's everything except the class. Whereas the Y, what we're actually trying to predict, is the class. And since we're trying to predict a class, that also means it's a classification problem compared to a regression problem. And then we use a train test split from scikit-learn to split it up into a training data set and a test set. And we use 20% for the test side. And what's important here is, of course, always state your random state, so your results will be reproducible. Okay. So down here we have now the training data set shown here, and it's 3,000 individual observations. Okay, and here we have the Y values, and now we see that, it was actually not only class one, it was just because the first half was class one and the second class was class zero. Okay. And here I do something that's very important. I count the number of training examples of each class. And does anyone have any idea about why this would be important? I don't know, can you, I haven't really used Zoom that much. It's possible to just answer in the group chat if you have an idea. Why is this important to know the number of counts for each class? I'll just give you a minute or two to think about that. I already see now that a bunch of answers are coming in, and first of all, yeah, of course it's important to have more than one class. That's the basic requirement for this to actually be interesting. But other than that, I see that a bunch of you are mentioning balancing, which is completely right. It's because if you have a data set which is like 99% of class of background and 1% of some signal that you want to measure, then when you're choosing the loss function, then if you just chose accuracy as your loss and then you predicted everything to be background, then you would have guessed 99% correctly. So you have to take that into account always, your choice of loss functions, depending on how imbalanced your data set is. So yes, nice work. Okay, so now on to the actual hyperparameter optimization. So first I'll talk about this part A, the naive approach, which is just a manual configuration, or also known as a grad student descent in the academic field, as someone likes to call it. And it's actually just you playing around yourself with the parameters. And that's basically how you start when you start to fit. You maybe choose one set of parameters and then you see your result and then you choose another set of parameters. And instead of just writing that as code, I've written a small snippet here which allows us to be a bit more interactive. Okay, so over here I have the notebook that the slides was based on. And here we had loaded in the data and all that. And now this function that I just showed you before allows us to interactively change the hyperparameters. So in this case, I'm using a decision tree classifier, and then I'm changing the maximum depth and the minimum samples in each leaf. And here I can actually, and I'm also printing what is the training accuracy. Of course, there might be some errors with the training accuracy, but that's up for you to try to change that. But at least that gives some kind of idea about how well you're actually doing. And okay, so if we have maximum depth of 1, we see this, compared to if you increase it to 2, 3, and so on. I can just see Andy has a question. Let me see, is there a problem?
Don't worry about that. I'll answer or interrupt you.
Yes, okay, I'll continue then. Okay, so here we can actually play around with the maximum depth, and we see as we increase the maximum depth, the training accuracy goes up, and it also becomes more and more difficult to actually visualize all of the different branches in the tree. So if you decrease it a bit again, just for visualization purposes, then we see how the minimum samples, how that changes. So to begin with, we had a lot of nodes, not a lot of child nodes here, and then as you increased it, you have fewer and fewer. And it's important to see that it seems like to have a high training accuracy, you need a small number of minimum samples. However, that might not reflect the same as you on the test set, but that's for you to work around later on and think about test sets compared to training sets. Okay, but this is also just a small little snippet that allows you to manually configure the parameters of the hyperparameters to see how that changes. Okay. So here I just took one parameter, max depth of 10, and minimum samples leaf 5, and then I test the accuracy on the test set. And since we saw before that it was a balanced data set, then accuracy might be a decent evaluation function. So I'm just gonna report that for now. So the accuracy by using a manual hyperparameter optimization gives us 82% correct. Okay, so that was the very first basic hyperparameter optimization method. Now, of course, that was very manual. You had to pick and choose parameters yourself, and that's not how you want to automate this. Because you want to automate this, you want to have the computer to do a lot of the heavy work for you. Let's continue with the most basic automatic hyperparameter optimization method, which is the grid search. So the grid search is also known as a full factorial design, and it's basically the Cartesian product of all the different configurations. And since this is a product, and you have the problem that it grows exponentially due to the cost of dimensionality. So how could you actually visualize this? Let's say that you had a hyperparameter, that you had a machine learning method that had two hyperparameters, and each of these hyperparameters could take 10 different values. So you have one hyperparameter on the x-axis and one hyperparameter on the y-axis. And the grid search is simply taking all different possible configuration and try them all out. So in this case, you had 10 times 10 total points in the grid to test out. And this cursive dimensionality shows if you had, for example, a third dimension that also had 10 different configurations, because then you would have 10 times 10 times 10. And think about if you had 5 or 6 dimensions like this. So this really grows exponentially, this number of grids in the grid search. Okay, but it's a very easy way to set up, and it's easy to think about that, okay, you have 3 hyperparameters. Okay, I'll just show it here, how we actually define it with the grid search in scikit-learn. So say that, okay, we want to test out 3 different hyperparameters for the max depth, 1, 10, and 100. And you also want to test out 3 different hyperparameters of the minimum sample length, 1, 10, and 100. Okay, so we define it as this dictionary, and then we say that, okay, we want to have a decision tree classifier, and then we use the grid search CV in scikit-learn, and we state that we want to use these parameters that we defined before, and then I hope you've all heard about cross-validation previously, and yes, okay. And then it's easy, with this object, we just fit it to the training data, and then we can actually take the results from this and put it into a pandas data frame, and we can then show that. I'll do that on the next slide, but for now we'll just look at what are the best parameters. What's the maximum depth 1, minimum sample length 1. That's also the same that we saw when we played around it ourselves. And we see here that the best score is 85%. However, this was all based on the training set, even though it's with a cross-validation. So let's actually try this out on the test set. In just a minute, first we'll see here, okay, from this grid search, we can actually see the mean fit times and the scores. We can see here for what set of hyperparameters was it, this was for 1.1. And we can even see the different splits in the cross-validation, how they scored. And we can see it from the training and the test set. So we have a lot of useful information that we can see here. Okay, so we take this best estimator, which was the best model, and then we actually compare it, and then we actually use it on the test set. So we, again here, we see what is the accuracy on the test set. On the training set, we saw that it was 85% accuracy. On the training set, it was 85%, and here on the test set, it's actually 84%. So that's still a decent performance boost compared to just our manual approach. Okay. Of course, this grid search, one of the problems was that it grows exponentially. So if you have a lot of different points to choose, a lot of different dimensions to choose points in, the total number of configurations that you have to choose is simply impossible to try out, especially if your model is quite slow to even fit it once. Okay, so instead of just using this grid layer, which we see over here, So here we see we had two dimensions. We have a dimension upwards here, and we have a dimension down here. And we choose 3 points for each dimension. In the grid layout, it would look like this, as we also saw before. In addition to the problem that the number of points to try out grows exponentially, you also have the problem that, think about it, if you had one unimportant parameter, in this case that's shown here on the y-axis, then, and you have this important parameter on the x-axis here, then with the grid layout, you're only choosing three different points for that grid. Even though, so you're actually wasting 6 points here on some set of parameters that are actually not important. Compare that to the random search. In random search, you specify a PDF, a probability density function, for each parameter, and then you pick a random point in that for that parameter and a random point for the other parameter, and so on. And we see an example of this here, where you've just chosen 9 points from a uniform distribution on both parameters. And we see that, first of all, well, it looks more random than the grid over here. But we also see that on the important parameter dimension here, you sample that dimension way better than the other. And the thing is that in a bunch of real cases, you have some hyperparameter dimensions which are more important than others. So generally, random search here is a lot better at actually sampling the hyperparameter space much more thoroughly than the grid search is. And it also has the advantage that you can choose how many random points you want to pick and actually use, compared to the grid, where you had to choose all 9 points here. Then here we'd also just want 4 random points. And Bergstra, who's also the author of the random search algorithm, he quoted, he mentioned in his paper, "This failure of grid search is the rule rather than the exception in high-dimensional hyperparameter optimization." And well, his solution was this random search. Okay, this random search, from now on, that's a very useful baseline, because it has almost no assumptions about the machine learning algorithm being optimized. And I would really, really recommend you to use random search instead of using grid search. Grid search is very old school, and it used to be fashionable, but now it's way too old school and it's not even retro yet. So please use random search instead of grid search. Okay, so how do we actually use this? Let's see. Okay, so here you use random search from scikit-learn. And we see here that something that's very close to how we did it with grid search, we choose the parameter, max depth, and we say, okay, this is supposed to be an integer number, and we want it to be Poisson distributed with a mean of 25. We could also say that a minimum sample leaf should be a random integer from 1 to 10. So here we see how we can mix and match the PDF for each hyperparameter according to what is the domain of that hyperparameter, as we saw earlier on, where both of these are supposed to be integer numbers. Had it been a real number, we could have chosen a normal distributed number or something like that. Okay. Then we specify the number of iterations. I choose 9, because we also had 9 points in the grid, so just to have some more fair comparison. And then we simply say, okay, we want to use the decision tree, and we want to use these parameters from the random search. Then again, cross-validation of 5, we specify the number of iterations, other than that, this is more or less the same as we saw before. We fit it to the training and the test set, then we look at the results from and put it into a data frame, and we see for the random search, the max depth of 26 and minimum sample leaf of 83 returns the best score here. And again, here we have all the individual fits returned, so you can look at that. And yes, CV5 is 5-folds in the data, using cross-validation with 5-folds. And here again, we return the best estimator of all 9 possible ones, and then we report the accuracy of that one. Okay, in this case, we got an accuracy from the random search of 84%. That's actually the same as the grid search. So we're not strictly certain that we'll get a better performance, but at least it's not worse. Okay. I'll just continue and then, yeah. Okay. So until now, this for a long time, random search was the way to go regarding hyperparameter optimization. And it has certainly a lot of useful features. For example, you can specify the number of points, and you're quite certain that with enough points, you'll sample your hyperdimensional hyperparameter space quite well. But it's also a pretty dumb algorithm. It doesn't include any history regarding which point did I use last time and how good was that point actually. So in comparison to that, we have something called Bayesian optimization. And Bayesian optimization is useful if your model takes a long time to even fit one single hyperparameter, because if that takes a long time, you can't afford to maybe try out 100 or 1,000 random points. Because if every time you run your algorithm and fit it with one set of hyperparameter, that takes, I don't know, 5 minutes and even an hour, then you really have to reduce the number of hyperparameter guesses. Okay, so in this Bayesian optimization, you have something called a probabilistic surrogate model. Then you have an acquisition function. And instead of just going through this, I'll rather show an example of how this actually works. So here, say that we have already fitted two previous points. And we have an observation here, and we have an observation here. And on the y-axis, we have the some gain function, not a loss, but for example, we have the accuracy of the fit. So we want to find the best hyperparameter, which is shown on the x-axis, and we want to find out what is the best of these. And right now, compared to these two, we have the best point is this one up here. Okay, so the blue curve we show here, that was actually what we had here, which was this surrogate model. And so we say that this surrogate model, we know what the value is, the points that we have already been, but between them, we're uncertain. Maybe it's better in this area, maybe it's worse, maybe it's better in this area, or maybe it's worse. But it's probably not better right around the other observation. It might be good close to this observation since it was already good. So we want to sample this space and do that in a smart way. And do that by looking at this acquisition function. Because that acquisition function is based on the previous points and the uncertainty we have between the points. Then you can you have a parameter. It's like a hyperparameter to choose yourself, because how adventurous do you want to be? Do you want to go somewhere here in the middle where you don't know how it actually looks like because you're uncertain? Or do you want to be conservative and go close to the previously best point? And that's something that's called the exploration parameter, and you have to pick that yourself. But with this set of exploration parameter, you end up with something like this, where the next best guess was right here. Okay, so say now we have a new observation. Okay, and now we also know, okay, that was actually worse than the previous one here. So now we have a good idea about what's happening between these two because they're close to each other, but we're still quite uncertain about what's happening over here. However, we've seen that, okay, this might be a bad area since, well, the two observations we have in this area, they're already pretty low on accuracy. Compare that to this area over here. We don't know yet how this looks, okay? So we take the maximum of the acquisition function here, and then we pick that as the next parameter. And we continue like that and so on. So this is an iterative process where we take all the previous points and their loss or their accuracy into account. And then we want to find the new best guess, and we do so iteratively. So this is a sequential model. This is actually a timing difference between the normal random search and Bayesian optimization. So we see here that to begin with, they follow each other very nicely. That's also what we would have guessed. To begin with, Bayesian optimization don't know, oh, where are the smart places to go, because it has to sample the space at first to have an idea about, okay, where should I go next? But once it has started to do that, it actually becomes a major speed up because it continues to go close to the points that are already good. And but here we have the wall clock time here. So you want to have the wall clock time as small as possible. And then you want to reduce this regret. So this is a loss. And right here we see that for the same loss, there's a factor of 20 speed up between the random search and the Bayesian optimization. Okay. So how is this Bayesian optimization used in Python? Well, it's actually not, it's not implemented in the same in scikit-learn yet. So it has the different implementations of Bayesian optimization. There's something called hyperopt and so on, but I use something here called Bayesian optimization. And they, all of the different implementations, they have different advantages and disadvantages. So just pick something that you like. It doesn't really matter that much, but now just include this one to show how you do this. Okay. So first we import the Bayesian optimization, and we also say that we want to use cross-validation score. So here we have a decision tree classifier, and we want to optimize for the max depth and minimum samples length. And this function here, it actually takes in some numbers and some data, and what are the truth, and then returns the mean of the cross-validation. Because this function is then fed into the Bayesian optimization. And we have to use a bit more code here, as you can see, compared to the other one, where, for example, we tell it that, okay, max depth here, that's an integer. Minimum samples length is also an integer. So the implementation here is not as smooth as it was for the grid search and the random search, but it's still working quite well. And here you want to optimize it. And we say that, okay, first we want it for four initial points, which are just randomly sampled across the space. And then after that, we pick five iterations where we actually use the smart guesses given by the Bayesian optimization. So this is a bit more verbose, the code, and it's a bit more technical, but hopefully it should also improve the results. Okay, so here we define what are the parameters to use, and we have the max depth, and we want to fit it in this range. We also want to fit the minimum samples length in this range. And then given the two functions defined above, we can fit the training data and we can define the parameters and say, okay, we want to use five iterations of the Bayesian optimization. And you have this max, which is the output here, that shows down here. And then we have this nice table showing, okay, as a function of iteration, what is the target, which is actually the accuracy. And we see here, what are the parameters that was used here? So first it shows a good value, then it shows something else and something else and something else. So these first four here, they were the random points. And then after that, it continues to go in a good direction, so to speak. And we see that it figured out that, okay, a small max depth is probably a good idea. And a large minimum samples weight here is apparently good. And then it just continues to improve in that direction. And in this case, well, it didn't really make any big differences, but this is also a very simple problem. Okay, so we turn the best parameters, and then we refit the decision tree with these parameters, and we fit it to the training data. And then we have an accuracy score here. And again, it's 84% accuracy. So, well, it was not even better than the previous ones, but this is also a very simple problem. And I know for some cases, it shows greater performance and or even similar performance in less time. All right. So, whereas these ones, the three previous methods, they were smart. You can also say, in this case, you can actually fit it and do a full scan, which is more or less the extreme version of grid search. So this is only possible in low dimensional space because you want to try every single possible configuration. And I've shown here how you could do that in a double for loop, nested loops, woohoo! So we fit it. We fit it to the data with the specific max step, and fit it here to training, see the accuracy on the test set, and then you save it, and then we can actually plot it here. And here we have max step, minimum sample leaf. And we see here that sometimes you have very obvious patterns. And for example, here we see that, well, you shouldn't have a minimum sample leaf of around 5 or 6 here. That's pretty bad, but you could still have it somewhere around over here. In this case, we see that we should probably not have a max depth of 1. And also we shouldn't have it very large. We should probably have it here around 5. However, the number of minimum samples leaf is not that important. So in this case, you could test out every possible configuration. That's only because this is a very small data set and a very simple model. If you're working with something more difficult, and advanced, then this would not be feasible. Okay, so to sum it up, you have this, first we have the different approaches here with the babysitting or the naive manual approach. Then you had the grid search, the random search, and then you had this Bayesian optimization, and this is short for sequential model-based optimization. Okay, so all of these, they work for machine learning. For deep learning, the grid search is actually not working that well, or the babysitting, because, well, if you have to properly make this, you have to be able to optimize it, and it has to be quick enough for it to work. And the grid search is simply not quick enough. And we see here that the last three ones, they are automated compared to manual one. And the cost here of running it, that is not because you have to pay dollars, but that's in time. And the grid search is simply trying out way too many configurations, so that's very slow. Random search is usually using fewer iterations compared, and then you have the Bayesian optimization, which hopefully, because it's using some of these smart guesses, it can go, it can, it doesn't have to have as many iterations running to get the same results. All right. And how well do these four methods actually explore this hyperparameter space? So the naive one, well, it actually depends on how good you are at testing out every single parameter, but usually you're pretty bad at it. For grid search, however, you're sure that you'll test out everything, which also makes it slow. And yeah, for the rest here, we have the random and the Bayesian optimization, which are medium. Okay, we also see that, well, you know the history of what you tried out previously, at least if you are able to remember it. Whereas the grids and random search, they're just testing out points independently. So the new points don't depend on the other previous points, which, however, makes them very easy to parallelize. Because if you have 20 cores, you can have one core fit a model with one set of hyperparameters, another core on another set of parameters, and so on, compared to the Bayesian optimization, since it's sequential. So it's difficult to fit the next point without knowing where the previous points were. So it's difficult to parallelize the Bayesian optimization method. So they have advantages and disadvantages, but I would personally recommend starting out with a random search, and then if that's not enough, then you look into something smarter, for example, the Bayesian optimization. Okay. And I've here included a link to a guide how to do it for deep learning models. And I'm here in the end, I'll show some of my own examples. It's some of my previous work. I can see now that it should probably have updated some of the figures, but they at least show the idea. So here I've tried out different loss functions for XGBoost. And I am comparing it to the overall evaluation function here, which is some uncertainty. And we want to reduce this MAD score as much as possible. So in this case, we have the hyperparameter is actually the loss function for the algorithm. And in this case, it's actually an example of a categorical hyperparameter, because, well, you can't really put numbers to these, so it's different categories. We see, first of all, that this Welsh is very, very bad. So is the Cauchy loss here. But we see that the log cost or the fair loss functions, they're actually doing a decent job. So this is just one example of how you could do it in a manual approach yourself for something very simple like this. When you then actually have to do something a bit more advanced, here we have a score that we want to decrease. And here I've run 20 iterations of random search just to see how the performance as a function of iteration number. And we see the minimum is over here. And we could compare that to running Bayesian optimization for the same, where the first 10 points are randomly run and the last 10 points are using these smart guesses. And in this case, we see, okay, there wasn't really any major improvement by using Bayesian optimization in this case. But I know some of my colleagues have used it and have gotten great results with it. Another thing to optimize for, which is very common, is the learning rate. Is the number of estimators in tree-based approaches. So for example, if you have a boosted decision tree, any kind of XGBoost, like GBM or something like that, you always have to optimize for the number of estimators. That's actually very closely related to what we talked about, that some of the parameters are more important than others, because the number of estimators is one of the very, very important parameters. So in this case, I changed the number of parameters and let it run for, well, more than 10,000 estimators, more than 10,000 trees. And then I found the best one. And then you could either take that, you could also regularize it even further and say, okay, we go back to the number of estimators that is the lowest, but it's still within one sigma of the best one. So that would be an even simpler model. So depending on whether or not speed was very important, then you choose this orange one. Or if performance was very important, you choose this point right here. So this is also something called early stopping, which is very useful. So the number of estimators and the learning rate are two very, very important parameters to always test for and optimize for. Okay, since I gave this talk last year, I ran into a new method called, and it's actually Bayesian optimization, which meets Hyperband, and it's called BOHB. It's almost like a System of a Down song, but not really. Okay, so Hyperband is based, I'll just go quickly through these, but think about that if you had four, let's say eight different values for hyperparameters, and then you test them on some part, some small part of the data, and then you take half of them and try them out on the next set of data. And then you also take the half ones that are best and the half ones that are best again. So in that case, you end up with one single set of hyperparameters out of all eight. And this is actually a quite useful method. However, this is also not really, doesn't have any history to it. So as we saw before, with random search and Bayesian optimization, if you include the smartness in the guesses, you can improve the speed up a lot. Then in this case here, you have the random search and Bayesian optimization from the same as the plot before. And then you have the hyperband, which is a lot faster. You see here, that's a factor 20 to begin with. And then you have this where you use hyperband, but you also include the smart guesses from before. So if you just use the hyperband, it was just generally faster, especially to begin with. But then over time, this hyperband parameter doesn't really improve that much until you add the smartness to the guesses, which you see in the green, and then it starts to go down. So you can actually improve the guesses by quite a lot. And I just wanted to mention this. I haven't included any code example of this because I just wanted to mention this new method. Okay, so that was my quick tour of hyperparameter optimization. In the GitHub that you already have the link for, you have the slides, and I've also included the Jupyter Notebook that you saw here previously. I would take a short break after this, I included this for you so you can actually take these snippets of code and run it on your own problem and on your own data. But okay, let's just does anyone else have any questions? I'll just stop sharing the screen and yeah.
Please keep your slides up. Questions are usually related to those.
Okay, I'll go back.
But meanwhile, I can tell you we had active discussions in the chat. There is at least a chapter in a book there. No, I'm overdoing it.
Yeah.
So any other questions than those in the chat? What does wall clock time and regret means?
Yes, okay. It's simply to show wall clock is related to how many iterations can you run. Because if you have the random search and you do maybe 10 random points, compare that to if you have 100 random points. So for each extra point, it takes some time, so you go out. But you should hopefully also improve the model by finding some new, better guesses. So your loss, regret is basically a new, it's another word for loss. So as you try out more and more points, time goes on, but your loss should also decrease. Yeah. Any
anyone else?
Yeah,
Focus was satisfied. Oh, sorry for interrupting.
I'm sorry. I had a question about genetic algorithms for hyperparameter optimization. Do you know anything about them? This should also be a new method.
Yeah. So the thing is that, well, as everything else in the topic of machine learning, then new methods are coming along all the time, and I haven't included anything about genetic algorithms. First of all, because they haven't really been that widely used, especially compared to grid search and random search, which has been like widely used very extensively. But I haven't included anything about genetic algorithms because they're quite new and not that, I haven't really seen that great performance boost by using it. If you really wanted to go that way, then I'm guessing that Bayesian optimization would usually perform as well, or even like something like these modern versions of Bayesian optimizations. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting area of research, how to improve hyperparameters.
Thank you.
No problem. Any other questions?
Can you read the chat question?
Yeah. Okay, Joachim's question there.
Yeah. I thought okay. That was a good one.
Yeah, definitely. So they are not related like one-to-one with the actual problem or the actual data. However, they are still not independent because they say something about what is the difficulty of your problem. Because if your problem was to differentiate between houses and apartments just by having the square footage, then you wouldn't need that many trees in your decision tree. And so if you increase the number of trees in the decision tree, that's usually also related to the complexity of your problem. So some of the parameters are easier than others to relate to the actual data and the problem at hand, but others are a bit more obscure and where sometimes it's just almost seems random. Yeah, okay. Was that enough for, was that those, Joachim?
I think one comment which answers many people's questions, or at least attempts to, the question is, when you do a random search, which often is a good idea, it's the good simple method, then the question is, some things are categorical. For example, you know, should I do A or B? And that's an easy one to include because it'll just choose randomly between the two. But with continuous variables, you need to specify a range and possibly a distribution that it should use for that search. And this requires you to be smart and start wide. Or please comment further, Christian, if you...
Actually, you don't need to specify range, but you need to specify a PDF. And this is one of the... this is where you need some kind, some level of domain knowledge that, well, it's not yet possible to fully automate. So this is also where, if the more you are spending time with these algorithms and these optimization methods, the more you start to have some gut ideas about which range available should I try out. And you could come with some rules of thumbs and some of the different parameters, but I'd rather say, okay, try something out and see, does it seem like it's going on the like the border of your range or the very high or the low end of the PDF or something like that? Then you should probably try out and extend the range or try a new PDF or something like that. But there's no one fixed answer for that. It all depends on the problem and your algorithm. But the more you try it out, the more you have a good idea about where should I start. But I would also say that, for example, let's say XGBoost or LightGBM or something like that, they have usually thought about the default parameters. It's not just a random set of parameters that they chose by default. So it's usually a good starting point, and then try to tweak it from there on. And so for the intuition for the hyperparameters, try and work with it a lot, and then after time you have, okay, this is maybe you don't have that many data points, then possibly the number of trees not that important. Then the number of trees should be lower compared to if you have very very large data set, and you also have an idea about that it's very complex. Then you should possibly increase the number of trees. But what's also important is that sometimes these hyperparameters, they relate to each other. So the number of trees is also almost linearly correlated with the step size, which is also why I showed it here. So here you have the number of estimators. However, that is almost linearly correlated with the learning rate. So step size, the learning rate. So if you increase the learning rate by a factor of 10, the number of estimators go down by almost a factor of 10. So sometimes it's not completely independent with these hyperparameters, and that is where domain knowledge comes into play. Yeah?
Actually, this is one of the reasons why when you solve the small project that we would like you to also submit a small file describing the hyperparameters that you used, because it will be interesting to see the distribution of hyperparameters for a particular problem. It would, of course, also be fun to see them for all sorts of problems, but that's beyond the scope of this course.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions? Comments? Sofus asks a very good question. Should we use hyperparameter optimization for the small project, or is that optional or not wanted? And it's not a meta question, it's a very good question. It is optional in the sense that if you give us a reasonable solution for everything we ask, then I said you will get at the very least ballpark 75% of the points. The very purpose of the small project is to just make sure that each and every person sits down and actually code up a tree-based and a neural network-based and an unsupervised algorithm and try it out on the data. Now, as written also on the page, the way we evaluate it includes the performance, but certainly not the only thing. So we'll see what you did and evaluate from that. And their hyperparameter optimization would be a part of it, but not at all of it, from 75 to 100%, 100 plus. All right, and then there's a question from Joachim. You want to try that question?
Some problems. How should I say? Okay. Sometimes you can try it both and see however well that works. And that's one answer. Just to try out different methods. That's almost like you hyperparameter optimization for the different algorithms manually.
And let me just add, this is the most common answer to should you in machine learning.
Try both, yeah. No, this is, I'll repeat myself now about domain knowledge. If you, depending on the problem, then there's some algorithms which are more suited towards solving that problem than others. For example, if you have something, some data that you can put into a spreadsheet, so for example, the data we had here, then usually tree-based approaches work very well, and if not as good as neural networks. So any kind of data you can put into an Excel spreadsheet, pandas or anything like that, then my go-to would be one kind of a tree-based algorithm. For example, XGBoost or LightGVM, depending on how large your data set is. If you, on the other hand, had something which involved images or text or sound, like language, or anything like that, then tree-based approaches are usually not that good anymore. And then you wouldn't even help to try to perform hyperparameter optimization for it, because the method itself is not suited for it. So even though you try to put you can try to put glitter on a piece of shit, but it'll still be a shit. So then instead use another algorithm to begin with. I hope that answered at least partly your question.
Well, I'll let you answer that, but you said it regarding setting a seed.
Yeah, set the random seed at first, and then it should give the same answer every time you run it. Unless if you actually want to have the stochasticity as part of it. But I generally recommend to set a random seed to begin with, so you actually know that your results are reproducible.
Yeah? Reproducibility.
Yes.
Super important.
Okay. I'll try to hang out on the chat for a bit after this, but other than that, thank you for your time.
Goodbye. And then I think we should all unmute and clap and say thank you to Christian if you can. It works even on Zoom.
Cool. Nice lecture.
super. Thank you, Christian. I think it's time to take a break. So let's take a break until 14:30. So 15 minutes of nothing. And then the exercise is to try to take and copy out from Christian's lecture, ways of trying to do the hyperparameter optimization. And you may choose to do it either on the BJET tagging or on the data from Monday on galaxy stars and quasars. It's up to you what you like and what you have a piece of code running on. Just take a piece of code you already have, make a copy, and now call it hyperparameter optimization, and try to run through. Just see that you can get, you know, a grid algorithm to work and that it sucks, and then try a random and see that it's hopefully better and at least faster, and finally try some of the more advanced ones. That's the exercise. Okay, see you back in 15 minutes.